podcast. I'm so excited because this episode, we're talking about one of my favorite topics of all time. The best Christmas movies ever.
Books, movies, TV shows.
Yeah, that's true. Christmas all of them. Fiction, yes.
All of them. Tell me more, Hannah. I have to say, you know that I don't watch classic movies to begin with.
But I'm also, I think depressed about that. I think that White Christmas needs to be your next one on the list because it will change your mind forever.
I also think this White Christmas one sounds like a fairly America-specific one. I don't even know what that movie is. Like, tell me what
it's about. Well, okay, so it follows around two former military men who have become an entertainment show. They are in the biz as entertainers, singers, dancers. And
what time period are we talking?
So we're talking about after World War II.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's probably in the 50s era. I actually don't even remember when the film came out. I want to say the film came out in the early 60s. I could be wrong. I'm actually going to look that up right now. White Christmas. It was a musical, 1954, actually.
Okay.
It was a musical with music by Irving Berlin. The White Christmas is actually the updated spinoff, if you will, of the original, which is Holiday Inn. Now, I've watched both. And I have to admit,
I've heard of Holiday Inn.
Well, the only reason why you've heard of Holiday Inn, actually, I think, is because when we went to the theater together
in
America,
they
were promoting Holiday Inn is what they were doing this Christmas. So that's probably where you've heard it from.
We saw the Newsies together when I was in America, which was very fun.
It was very good.
Yes, they were promoting that.
But yeah, so the White Christmas is essentially the new, they updated the story. Irving Berlin wanted a story, and it's Irving Berlin's music. Goodness gracious, I can say that. And his classic White Christmas, which is what the whole story is about. So these two men who are military veterans in that era, get out of the military and begin performing all over the country. They can become a huge hit. And along the way, they happen to meet two sisters who are also entertaining, but not as successful. And they see them and they meet, and one of them falls in love with the other very early on, and the other one falls in love with the other somewhat more later on. But the heart of the show is the sweetest thing. This is part of the reason why I love the movie so much, is that they come upon a B&B ski lodge kind of resort, and they end up at this resort, and it happens to be owned by their former general, a retired general, and the resort is doing very poorly, and they feel such affection. They had such great affection for their general when they were in the military, and then now that they've come back and have begun and become a great success, they feel not pity, but empathy that this general is not doing as well as they are, that he's struggling to find his place, and the ski lodge isn't running very well. And so they come up with this grand plan with these two sisters who are still with them, and basically the whole the rest of the show is them like trying to put together a production to come help bring people into the ski lodge and save the ski lodge and honor the general. And there is this most poignant moment of the show that my dad always cries in. And I love watching him cry during that movie. in a good way. He just is the sweetest. But it's... So to set up the show... One of the things is that one of the cohorts of the duo decide that they're going to go out and bring together all of the members of the militaries they can who were under this general, in the army specifically, and somehow he gets them all. And on Christmas Eve, they have this big production of a show, but before the big production of the show, they surprise the general with all of them there marching out in uniform, singing about like how much they love the army and how much they love the general and honoring him. And the general just kind of stands there and accepts it and like is very, very touched and moved by it. You can see it. And then he walks down the row where they had like flanked each side of the aisle and then onto the stage. He goes up and shakes hands and kind of steps back into that role of a general. And it's the moment that just makes you feel like this is the heart of the show, is like kind of honoring his military. And oh my gosh, it just makes my dad cry every time. It certainly makes my heart warm every time. I can't say I cry every time, but it is the sweetest thing. The music is so beloved. I remember singing White Christmas in high school, but there's other songs that I know very well. One of my favorite moments of the show, first of all, the dialogue is phenomenal. You talk about Aaron Sorkin being a great dialogue writer. The dialogue, I don't even know who wrote the screenplay to White Christmas and who wrote the dialogue between the two, but one of my favorite moments is in the beginning, they're fighting over about how much time that this is taking up, and there's one that's like obsessed with the work and one that just wants a break. And the one that just wants a break just was like, well, what can the one that doesn't want a break, that's a workaholic, well, what do you want me to do? And the one that doesn't have, I want you to have 9 kids. And even if you give 5 minutes to each of those 9 kids, that's 45 minutes all to myself. And I'd be at least able to go out and get a haircut once in a while. And then they're talking about another member of the military and doing a favor for this also former vet. And it goes, oh, why do we have to do? And they're kind of complaining about having to do it. And they're talking about, oh, well, his sisters wrote us and showed a picture of the sisters. How can a guy that ugly have the nerve to have sisters? Oh, there are just so many great one-liners from that movie, and the show itself is just so heartwarming and heartfelt. I love the music. All-time favorite movie, Christmas, hands down. Okay.
Cool. Look,
Jess, tell me about your Christmas movies experiences.
you brought up Die Hard earlier, so I'm going to circle back to it, but not about Die Hard specifically, but about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I started watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine again. I love the first 2 seasons. I have seen them repeatedly. I stopped at season 3 at the beginning of it, and I only recently restarted. I think I'm like halfway through season 4. And so it was only a couple of weeks ago that I saw the Christmas Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode where Die Hard happens to Jake for real. Because the main character, Jake Peralta, is obsessed with Die Hard. It is his favorite movie. It is the reason he became a cop. He references it as much as possible. He is next level obsession. And he is late getting, he bought a present for his girlfriend Amy, but he forgot to buy one for his best friend Charles, who is a hilarious character of the show, and he's another cop. And so he's in this department store buying Charles's present, but then Charles, he like has to lie, and so Charles thinks he's actually forgotten Amy, and he's getting Amy presents. So Jake and Charles and Chelsea Peretti's character Gina, Charles, Gina, and Jake, they are all in the department store, and this gang of 4 guys is committing an armed robbery while they're there and has hostages. And Jake is like, ah, Die Hard's happening for real because it's Christmas Eve. And he's trying to treat it seriously. He's like, it's really terrible they have hostages, but Die Hard's happening. And he's like so excited. And he really wants them to be German. He keeps calling them Hans and different things because that's what it is in the movie. And like he goes around and he's like marking, he's spying throughout the shop and he's marking where they all are. And he's like, I'll call you Hans and I'll call you whatever. And then, like, one of them is talking on the phone and he has a Canadian accent and he's so disgusted. He's like, why did you have to be Canadian? And his name's Matt. And so he hates that one the most. He's like, and Matt. And so the whole episode is like this replay of Die Hard, but on a in a department store instead of a whole building with a lot less killing. And yeah, and it's just quite funny. His enthusiasm is great. And meanwhile, the whole time they're trying to stop Gina, who is not a cop. She's like the administration assistant person who works in the station with them. She wants to improvise a flamethrower with deodorant and a lighter, and like their whole time they're trying to stop her from attacking the thieves herself, and like at the end she gets away from them and gets the deodorant can and the lighter, and is just like going off, like nearly burning all these people and cops and different stuff. And it's a great episode. So yes, Die Hard, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. If Die Hard does not count as a Christmas movie, the Brooklyn Nine-Nine does, because Christmas features more prominently.
That's hilarious.
It was great.
Okay, well, I guess I can give you that, sort of, but whatever. To me, Christmas is magical. It sounds like Die Hard and Brooklyn Nine-Nine is just not the definition of magical to me.
No, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is great. It's like a little bit of Christmas stuff, but then a lot of comedy.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I have to admit that while I am such a Christmas movie junkie, I have so many on my list, I do have to admit that one Christmas-themed fiction has totally made it on my list for something that now I'm going to have to, like, make a point to read every year. Last year was the last year, ha, 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 that Melissa Tagg released her Christmas novella series, at least as far as the three goes that she released. She released one every year of the last 3 years from last year prior. And it's her Enchanted novella series. And it was something I looked forward to for two Christmases. I mean, I looked forward to it for the first Christmas, but I didn't really know what to expect. And then she blew me out of the water on her first one. And I was like, I have to read these every year. I mean, I can't get enough Christmas when it is Christmas season. So these ones were just like the thing that I craved and I devoured. So the next 2 years, I was just so excited for them to release. I won't go into each and every one, mostly because that would probably take too much time. But the entire series, of course, pretty much takes place in her favorite and her town of writing, Maple Valley, Iowa, which was based on her hometown. And it is the definition of like strange things hometown happenings does, plus cute, sweet Christmas time things. And it all the things that you get from the sense of like Christmas and snow and Gilmore Girls and Lorelai and Gilmore Girls.
She really loves snow.
I mean, I love
and really
snow.
Loves like classic movies and Christmas movies and Gilmore
love
Girls
classic
and all
movies
that.
And Christmas movies and Gilmore Girls and all that. And it was just like the culmination of all of these things together were just like the beautiful amalgamation of Christmas. And it was just, oh, it was just so exciting whenever she released them, and now I'm so sad that the series has ended, and I'm kind of hoping that she decides to write another Christmas novella this year. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I'm kind of hoping it's going to happen later on, but if you need some books to read for Christmas that are just light, I mean, they're her tone. They're not light and fluffy, but they're light.
They're like whimsical, sweet, yeah, whimsy. Funny. Yeah.
Whimsy. That's a great word to describe her tone. So if you just need something not super long, like if you want something on a quick road trip to visit friends and family, Melissa Tagg's Enchanted series. Go read them now. So.
Good stuff. I have only just started them, but it's good stuff so far.
They are so good. All right. Just
okay.
Knock out your non-diehard-esque Christmas-esque style movies, please.
I'm gonna go to another honorable mention one, and then I'll get to some of my other like sort of yearly ones I watch each year later. But this one is a favorite that involves Santa, but it's not based around Christmas so much as it is. I think Easter is the holiday at stake. Rise of the Guardians. Really good kids movie. One of my favorites. If I'm watching a movie with my little sister, this is one of my favorites of the kids movie selection for us to watch together. It centers around Jack Frost, voiced by Chris Pine, a favorite of mine.
he does have a very deep and rich voice. Oh, yeah.
And it's about all of the, like, the holiday mascots, I guess you'd call them, the Easter Bunny, Santa, Jack Frost, Sandman, and their adversary is Pitch Black, played by a very creepy Jude Law. And Jack Frost is the forgotten one, you know, nobody ever sees him. He's invisible. He likes creating mischief and fun for the kids, but they don't see him. And he's a bit of an outcast to Santa and all the other ones because he's too mischievous. He does naughty things, and they like chucked him out of their club. But then Pitch is coming, and he's like stealing the magic of – oh, it does have Christmas in it, I think, because they delivered all the presents. He's stealing the magic of Christmas or Easter or all the holidays. He's stealing all the magic and all the belief out of the children, yeah. And so now they need Jack Frost and his skills to help them save their respective holidays. Aww. And Hugh Jackman is the Easter Bunny, and it's so funny. He has his Australian accent, and like he's a giant hare, but he kind of acts a bit more like a kangaroo. I think that's why they play it up the Australian angle, because he's like a thing that bounces. I don't know.
Well, I mean, bunnies hop too.
Yeah, bunnies hop too. I don't know. It cracked me up. So yeah, Australian Easter Bunny, but it was great. And it's a funny movie. Alec Baldwin is Santa, but he's like Russian mob Santa. He's got naughty and nice tattooed up his forearms, and he has a Russian accent, and it is funny as. and Isla Fisher, another Aussie. I'm pretty sure she is the Tooth Fairy. So yeah, it's it's a funny movie. It's got a heap of Christmas stuff, and it is entertaining for adults as well as kids. It's
That's one so of our favorites. Funny. That kind of ties into my next choice, because we, and talking about all of the like the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy, and that kind of ties into the Santa Claus too. My choice is actually the Santa Claus one.
My favorite's the second one.
Okay, I do love the second one. I have a very deep affection for it. I remember seeing it in theaters with my family, and I think we saw it like 3 times in theaters. And that was a big thing, because A, we saw it 3 times in theaters, and B, we saw it 3 times in theaters when we were living in the middle of nowhere, Montana, where it was, I think it was 30 miles to the nearest movie theater, but that was like playing the old movies where you got it for cheaper, but it was like 2 months after it released. So I think we saw it first in like a town 60 miles away, and I think we saw it again in a town 60 miles away, and then I think it was after Christmas or right before Christmas or sometime we went back to see it again a third time in the smaller one closer to us. But Santa Claus 1, you guys, part of the reason why I love Santa Claus 1 is just the song that's sung when Charlie, the son, and Tim Allen, who plays the new Santa, but he's not quite the new Santa yet, they pull up to the North Pole for the first time.
Because he, like, kills old Santa.
He doesn't kill him! He scares him, and Santa falls off!
Yes. Yeah, but then he dies!
But not Tim Allen's fault!
Oh, yeah, no, it's not Tim Allen's fault, but, okay. Like, this is a children's movie where Santa dies.
But he doesn't die, he disappears. We don't know what happened to Santa. Let's not be putting stuff on a children's movie that should not be there. We're going to imagine that Santa just went back to his normal life. Anyway, Tim Allen plays Scott Calvin, SC, who essentially is a normal human being who's very kind of business-driven and money-driven. Not a Christmas guy. And ends up becoming Santa by the fact that Santa falls off his roof and, quote, doesn't die.
Therefore, the Santa-ness passes to the nearest white male.
And later that night, Tim Allen, or Scott Calvin, I guess I should say, and his son, Charlie, end up at the North Pole, and an elf comes out and presses a little button, and then Santa comes down in his sleigh into the grandness of the actual, like, area of the North Pole where all the elves are. And I love the song that plays right there. As a matter of fact, I listened to it today because it was snowing outside this morning and I needed some Christmas music, and that was one of my favorite Christmas songs. But I absolutely just love the movie. I have to admit, I always really, really wanted to date the head elf of the elf squad who can fly.
Isn't it the guy with numbers?
You might be right. Yeah. Oh my gosh, what if that? Oh, it is. Yes. No, wait. That's not him, though. Different
there
guy.
There is an elf who's the guy out of numbers.
Yes, I know who that is. Bernard. But the other elf, the guys that can fly, the elves that can fly, elves with attitude. Elves with attitude. That's the line. And he can cut metal with a tinsel, like a floss, like kind of just like a laser kind of a thing. He just goes, and my favorite, I always thought he was so cute. I just wanted to go flying with that elf. I don't even know who he is. I just wanted to go
all
flying
the
with
pictures
that elf.
Are of the numbers one. I can't okay. see any pictures of another elf.
I'll see if I can find him for you later, but he is pretty darn cute, and he talks like, as a kid, I used to love the way he talked. I certainly don't like it now, but it was one of those moments where I'm like, I just love this movie. It's just such a sweet movie that kind of takes you like through the imagination of, you know, can Santa really be real? And I mean, not to break it to anyone else here, but sorry, I don't believe Santa is real. But it was such a sweet movie. I love the Santa Claus. It's one I watch every single year.
I'm not getting distracted by photos of the little kid who apparently grew up to be not that bad looking.
All right. Well, while you're getting distracted, do you want to tell us about your next Christmas thing that you want to
Let's
talk
refocus.
About? Bring in your focus. Bring in the focus. Ignore the cute little...
So there are probably only two other movies I can think of that I do watch at Christmas time, just if they happen to be on TV when my family's around. And they would be, the modern one is Elf, pretty much one of the few Will Ferrell movies I actually like, but it is funny.
You did it! It's has the Zoe best Deschanel coffee!
Yes! I like that Zoe Deschanel's in it, she's great, and it genuinely is fairly funny, although Abby has now watched it so many times that I am getting a little bit sick of it. But the other one that I have not ever really gotten sick of is Home Alone, especially 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. 3 was decent, 4 shall never be spoken of.
I so wholeheartedly agree with that.
1 and 2 were great. They're still pretty entertaining. Oh man, every time I see the dude stand on the nail on the basement stairs, my basement stairs freak me out. Going back to a previous chat about how scary basement stairs are to Australians.
For those of you that turned in last week, Jess has an irrational fear of basements due to the fact that Australia... It is not rational at all.
It was inceptioned into my brain by TV because Australians don't have basements. So the only time we see them is in American scary movies where you're going down the basement and someone tries to kill you with an axe. I'm specifically thinking of Disturbia. Okay.
Regardless of the very irrational fear... Tell us a little bit more about some of your favorite Home Alone moments.
Oh, man. There's just something about, like, setting up all the pranks. The paint can nailing him in the face, the iron hooked up to the door handle. Like, none of those things have ever stopped being funny when he sets his head on fire and he has to put it out in the toilet.
Yep.
Like, just all great things. And because the kid's so smart, I think that's what I liked about it. The kid, like, thinks of a way to buy the groceries and lie his way through everything, and he survives on his own. Yep. He sets up all the cardboard cutouts to look like there's a party at his house to keep the robbers away.
Yeah.
And he, like, masterminds everything, and they're idiots, and he just owns them, and it was great.
This is my house. I have to defend it. Such a great line. Oh, that is one of my all-time favorites, just because, let's be honest, as human beings, we find it hilarious watching other human beings fail at life and specifically get hurt.
Trip over marbles, land on crushed up Christmas balls.
Things that you never want to experience in your life, but will laugh at other people when they do.
Yep. Classic, classic stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap up my last one with a movie that probably nobody has ever heard of before, but it was a movie that we recorded on, I think it was on TV, and we recorded it, and it's become I love watching this movie every single year. It was with a young Jacqueline Smith, Charlie's Angels, I believe is her original, she's one of the original Charlie's Angels.
70s Charlie's Angels?
Yeah, the originals.
Wow.
Yeah. Oops. So... this movie was probably in the 80s, and It basically takes place in Alaska where they are drilling for oil. And the premise of the movie is this family moves up to this town basically for the dad's job. The dad is extremely busy at work and very stressed because they have to find oil. They have to drill and they have to find oil. And that is a very important thing for this dad. Now, the mom is, of course, trying to be a little bit more gracious because the dad is stressed and she's trying to get him, but it's getting frustrating and the kids are having a hard time adjusting. And one day the kids get lost. She goes to find them and they basically get picked up by an elf. Okay. Who looks completely normal, like a normal older human being, just obviously on the shorter side, and drives in a sleigh, like not like Santa's sleigh, but in a pretty sleigh
Is this
through.
movie teaching children the wrong message about getting into vehicles with strangers?
I don't know what it is, but in Alaska, if you're stranded, I don't think you have much choice. So she gets in with the kids. And they basically take a trek through Alaska, if you will, and enter into the North Pole. Okay, now here's the part about this movie that's like the heart of the story is the fact that every time they're drilling and blasting to get oil, they essentially create a big earthquake for the North Pole. And they're concerned that the drilling and the blasting is basically going to obliterate the North Pole. And Santa and the elves will be gone forever, and there'll be no more Christmas, and it's the end of the world. And so they experience this wonderful thing. And of course, the mom is trying to be like, this is like, you're not really Santa. This isn't real. And by the end of that trip, she's like, oh my gosh, it's Santa. Well, they come back. They like get back home. And in the meantime, the dad was worried because they were missing. The whole family was missing, and he was just a nervous wreck. And as they come back, the mom is trying to explain to her husband what all transpired. And he's like, you're crazy. You are crazy. And basically the rest of the movie is about them trying to convince the dad and other people in his company that where they're drilling is not safe. We want to save Christmas. And by the way, there's actually oil over here, away from the North Pole. So please don't destroy Christmas. And it ends, of course, very happily with saving Christmas, and Santa and this family become best friends, and they get toys, and it's all fun. I don't know, it's just like a little bit weird, not gonna lie, but it is one of my favorite Christmas movies. I just remember watching it all the time as a kid. So it's The Night They Saved Christmas. I'm pretty sure it was filmed in the 80s.
It reminds me, I think part of my favorite thing about some Christmas movies is seeing how they different ways that different movie makers imagine the North Pole. I love seeing like the mechanics of how the North Pole works in both, especially the Santa Claus movies, but also that's one of the funniest things about Rise of the Guardians is seeing how all the elves work and stuff, because there's a particular elf that they keep showing throughout the movie, and he's painting all these little toy robots or something, and then Santa will just, and they're like, he'll be painting the last one and it's red, and Santa walks past and calls out over his shoulder, make it blue, and the little elf
Get
is
blue.
just like, ah! And it keeps happening throughout the movie, and it gets funny and funnier.
I do have to give a quick honorable mention to one of my absolute favorites, too. I know that we already went through a classic in White Christmas, but another classic that I have to watch every year is the original Miracle on 34th Street. It is by far one of my favorite movies ever. Of course, it mostly takes place at the beginning on Thanksgiving Day and then takes place the rest of the series through Christmas. And I won't take a lot of time more to explain the plot, but it is the sweetest and I love it. And there's another classic movie I should try to get Jess into, but I want to try to get her on White Christmas first.
Which one is the one with the Scrooge character? Is that the ghosts of
Oh,
something?
are you talking about A Christmas Carol?
A
Charles,
Christmas Carol. That's right. But he sees the
Dickens.
ghosts of his past
Yes.
selves or something.
Yes,
Yeah,
the
I've heard of that one.
Ghost
Is
of
that like a
Christmas Past.
Charles Dickens story?
It is. It's actually, you know what? I actually saw the theater production of it last year at Minneapolis has a what's known as the Guthrie Theater. It's one of the best theaters in our city. And
I have been to the
actually
theater.
yes. And actually, the Guthrie has had some really major actors come and perform there. Really, really great quality work. But I got to go to A Christmas Carol last year there. And if you have not experienced Charles Dickens' writing, you absolutely should. The theater production was absolutely outstanding, as it is every year. But the theater production is, yeah, it follows Scrooge. Who is basically an old curmudgeon who hates
Is that where
Christmas.
Scrooge McDuck comes from?
Yes, that is exactly where Scrooge McDuck come from.
And also Matthew McConaughey's character in The Ghosts of Girlfriends Past has like a
Yes,
modern
it's
twist on
basic.
it.
Yeah, it's a modern twist on it.
Yeah,
It's exactly
I
what
thought that's
it
where
is.
that came from.
Yep, so it's the Ghosts of Christmas Past are the three ghosts that are the Ghosts of Christmas. The Ghosts of Christmas Past, the Ghosts of Christmas Present, Ghosts of Christmas Future. And it goes through and the ghosts kind of take him that take Scrooge through his life, where Scrooge kind of recognizes his ways. And one of my favorite lines, and I will probably slaughter this line, and I'm so sorry, but Charles Dickens writes in his book. He's one of Scrooge's former business partners and friends, talks about these chains I forged in life. And you'll have to look up the rest of the quote because it's amazing. Because I also can't remember exactly, and I don't want to butcher it. Maybe I'll look it up right now. But the chains I forged in life, and he literally is wearing these chains. And that is one of the best lines I think that I have ever read in any book whatsoever. Here we go. His Marley is his deceased business partner. And the I wear the chain I forged in life, replied the ghost. Where is the actual full quote? Full quote. I'm going to take just a second here to look that up because
Well,
I'm
while
not
you do
con
that, I'm going to say the Christmas movie that I want to see that does not exist, to my knowledge. I want to see an Australian Christmas movie. And I don't want
Okay.
it like not only Australians. I want it to be like an American comes to Australia and has the hot summer beach Christmas that Australia loves and has every year because our seasons are, of course, the opposite to
So
America's being in the Southern Hemisphere.
let me ask you a question then, because I know Australia also doesn't get like a winter where you get snow. Like,
Yeah, it doesn't hardly snow here.
yeah. So would you ever want a Christmas in snow? Because that's what
I've
you've
had
seen.
one. I went to 2016 Christmas. My family went
That's
on the
right.
best holiday ever
You
to Whistler
did.
in Canada, and we had our first and only white Christmas there.
What did you
And
think
that was
about it?
cool. It was really fun because we were like, oh, white Christmas, it's like the movies, you know, and the whole thing of Whistler like looks stunning. And it was fun. It felt like we'd stepped into a movie and it was really fun. But it was also weird to us because we weren't home. We weren't having like mum's traditional Christmas lunch, and it was kind of also weird that it wasn't hot for us. You know, we spend Christmas usually like in the air conditioning and then by the pool or something like that. And, you know,
Yeah.
we'll have a barbecue and different
Huh.
things. So on one hand it was like odd because it was different, but on the other hand it was super fun because like Australia's culture is very much fed off America's. So like we still have snow-themed decorations, even though it does not snow here. Like it makes no sense. But everything comes from America, so that's and even if it didn't come from America, you know, it would come from Britain if America didn't exist. And like, you know, most countries are in the Northern Hemisphere and they have snow.
Yeah. I do
So
have to admit that I have had Christmases without snow. In regards to like when I lived in California, I had the Christmas season. Christmas in California is just like mostly sunny, but sometimes it's cloudy with rain. And so that was very different for me to get used to. And so when it was raining about a couple weeks ago, well, let's see now, I don't know. Sometime in October, it was very rainy, and I was just like, oh, like this feels like California Christmas.
Yeah, I want to see one about an American like comes to Australia and has a hot Christmas, but learns that it is not about the
The cold.
snow or the different
I think that would be really hard for us. I'm not going to lie.
Christmas is
still at least
out.
For us Midwesterners that get snow. Yeah. Southern Californians would not have a problem with that.
You can still have an epic Christmas with even if all your traditions and stuff get swept away and you have to eat Christmas lunch with like a tin of baked beans or something, they'll have an awesome Christmas.
Yeah. So the line I was referring to is Jacob Marley says, "I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it." And I wish I could do the voice just like the actor did when I saw him last year. He was so good. Seeing if you can get a chance to see A Christmas Carol in a live production of A Christmas Carol, absolutely worth it. I think the movies do a really great job of it too. But there is something about seeing that moment in person, in the theater. Oh, it just blew me away. Anyway, I think that is going to wrap us up for my favorite episode of the year. Our Christmas mm-hmm. episode.
And our last episode for 2018, our first year of the podcast.
Woo!
Is done!
That Woo! Went fast.
Can't believe it. So thank you for going through this year with us, everybody. And you will see us again in 2019. We are going to work over the holidays to plan some different cool guests and different things we'll be working on. So because we'll be working on all that, we will be back in February. We will take January off to get our stuff sorted, and you will see us back with all new topics and guests and different fun things in 2019, the year that my book will be released.
Yay! So excited for that. Jess just messaged me today and said that her book was officially on Goodreads. So
yes,
so excited to see that.
Very excited. And by the time this airs, I should have been able to link. At the moment, I can't get my personal account like linked to the book, so
okay.
like it's not connected yet. But I'm working on it this week. So by the time this comes out, it will all be linked. I will probably have announced far and wide that it will be on Amazon and everywhere. Love and Other Mistakes, a romantic comedy. So keep an eye out for it, everybody.
Also, everyone,
soon.
Yes. Also, everyone, if you would like to give us suggestions for topics you want us to discuss,
yes.
special guests you want us to have, we would absolutely love and welcome your input. This has definitely been a learning experience for us this year, so we've kind of just tried to test things out and see what people like, and we definitely just want to know what you want us to do and what you want us to hear or what you want to hear about. So
yes,
either send us a message in an email, comment,
message us, tell us, and that helps us get the guests as well. It mm-hmm. really helps in booking someone to be able to say our fans have requested you.
Mm-hmm.
That will be awesome. So if you have someone you want to hear, send their name into us and you are much more likely to be able to hear them, and that will be really cool. We know that you guys love it when we do some interviews, so we will be working
and
on
I wanna
that.
And I want to take a moment really quick. It's been a great year. We've had some phenomenal special guests. I think our first special guest was actually Melissa Tagg.
She was, yep.
And that was the most bizarre, cool, exciting thing for me, who is just obsessed with her work.
Awesome.
And so thank you to all of our special guests who came on our episodes over the last year. It has been mm-hmm. incredible to see the support that we have from
away.
You. Yeah.
Yep. Just so. Blown away by like how supportive our special guests have been and being happy to come on and chat to us, and it's been incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So everyone, thank you so much for joining us in 2018. We will see you all in 2019, and we hope you guys have a great holiday season.
See you later.
Bye.
Hey guys, if you want to continue the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/storynerds and on Twitter at storynerds_chat.
Or you can find us individually. I am on Instagram and Facebook at Jessica Kate Writing and on Twitter at JessicaKate05.
And I am on Instagram and Facebook at Hannah Davis Author and on Twitter at Hannah D Author. Join us next time to tune in and nerd out.
Bye.
Bye.